Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Joining us now on our program, a gentleman who's been with us numerous times before, imparting his wisdom, his knowledge, experience on some of the things that, quite frankly, we need a rationalized discussion on. And we definitely need people who have the know-how. And this gentleman, he is one of those. Let's welcome back to our program, first time for the year, Dr. Joel Tilak Singh. Dr. Tilak Singh, good morning to you. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. The country is in the midst of yet another discussion related to COVID-19, to the point where we had, for the very first time in a long time, the Prime Minister and the medical professionals coming to the nation in a press conference to update us of what's going on. One of the fundamental developments coming out of that press conference is the decision by the government to leave things as they are. And that in itself sparked a whole discussion about whether it was the right approach, whether we need to lock down, what do we do about carnival. And of course, we are seeing, we were told that there is a rise in the numbers. So let's begin with you giving us your summary of what's been going on, where we are, and probably where we need to go.
Yes, sir. I want to thank you once more for being at the forefront of leading this drive to enhance the level of awareness and the level of education that we have among the population about this continuing pandemic. So I think the first statement that we have been hearing that it's the end of the COVID-19 era has been found to actually be wrong, that it never ended. We are still very much in a raging global epidemic in the world, and with the explosion of highly transmissible variants. So all these names, in fact, I think they've run out of Greek names in the alphabet now, and they have just started using letters. But these highly transmissible variants are exploding, not just in China, but places like North America and Europe. And it tends to be seen, especially at winter time. So persons may have heard about a few of the other two viruses, like the flu, and there was another one which may infect children, and it's shortened to RSV. And there were fears of a tripledemic of persons actually grappling all three viruses at the same time. Now, with this relentless surge in infections and global travel, particularly after the holiday season and as we move to carnival, one may expect that there may be a rise in not just infection, but if you have more people ill, the chance for hospitalizations and death in vulnerable patients is also increased. So those vulnerable persons, if you're old, if you're obese, if you're battling chronic medical problems, such as high blood sugar, high blood pressure, heart disease, lung problems, those lower your level of immunity and increase the chance for hospitalization and death. One of the important things that persons have to remember is that it's all about balancing your risk as we move into times in which there will be increased travel and the potential to increase transmission of this airborne virus. So the virus is airborne. There are micro droplets. It lingers. It lingers in the air, similar to cigarette smoke. So if someone is smoking in a room, a closed, crowded area, and they leave that room, that smoke lingers for some time. So it's an airborne virus. Be particularly careful in the coming weeks in those areas that have been known as the three C's: closed, crowded, close contact settings.
Definitely good advice. But we've come full circle, haven't we?
Yes.
And it appears as though, as you rightly did say, there is the perception by some that this thing done, it gone, and we can go on with our lives as is normal. One of the decisions that has been highly controversial is the decision to allow Carnival to go ahead as is and to put no other restrictions in place, to leave all the restrictions as they are at this point in time. What's your take on that position?
Now, I can understand that when you're holding an event, such as the carnival, that there are socioeconomic, there may be psychological aspects, there are cultural reasons, but it must be balanced by the health aspects. particularly as you're considering the fact that we're having a surge in infections, hospitalizations, and even deaths. Now, once more, it is with respect to balancing risk. If someone thinks that they will be in a closed setting and they may be indoors, that person, you don't need a mandate, you don't need a law to tell you that you should put on an N95 mask if you're going indoors, so if you're going into shops during the carnival season. So if you think that persons may have coughs and colds, you'd want to avoid those situations. Now, we've been speaking about individual responsibility, and I know that persons would have had a whole problem about vaccines and whether or not they should get a booster and whether or not vaccines will be the way out of the pandemic. And one of the statements I want to make at this point is that vaccination, a vaccine-only approach, is never going to end a pandemic. A vaccine-only approach, particularly for an airborne virus, is not the right line of attack when it comes to dealing with it. It is a multi-layered approach that has been advocated not by me, but by the WHO and health organizations around the world, including the Minister of Health, that it involves increasing ventilation, trying to keep a well-ventilated area. It involves air filtration, trying to make our buildings, like our schools and offices, healthier during the carnival period. Notice that I'm not speaking about the revelers on the street, because the persons who have to be careful are those indoors as well, because of increased movement, and those revelers at the end of the day will be going to hotels, will be going to homes, they'll be visiting persons. So it is with respect to increased movement of people. Of course, shouting, singing, and dancing in closed areas or increased transmission too. So wearing your N95 mask indoors, so if you think that you're in high-risk areas, that is something that you don't need a mandate for. And in fact, I still use it. It is still part of the law that it should be used in healthcare settings. And a vaccine-only approach, particularly with these new variants, is not going to help. Because these highly wily mutants, these mutant variants, evade the level of immunity that has been afforded by some of these vaccines. And that's been seen all over the world. So ventilation, filtration, what about things like paid sick leave? What about, it's easy for us to say that if you're ill, to stay at home. It's easy to say that if you have a flu-like illness, you shouldn't go to work or school. But have we set things in place for persons who will not be paid if they stay at home? Have we tried to make our buildings healthier? Do we have air filters in places like, let's say, studios or in buildings that will increase the risk of transmission during the carnival period? So there are pros and cons about holding an event that will involve increased air travel, particularly in areas like the US and the UK where the pandemic continues to rage. And those persons who are vulnerable, I want to make a clarion call, particularly if you're unvaccinated, if you're elderly, obese, and battling chronic medical problems, please ensure that you are scrupulously managing these medical illnesses and that you ensure safety. Stay away from those closed areas. Stay away from the high-risk regions. Wear your N95 mask indoors and be vigilant.
There are several issues that I think people are looking for clarification on. Ministry of Health may have made some pronouncements, but as we have you here, let's delve into them a bit. And one of that is the Prime Minister said that as a nation, we've achieved 90-something percent of some sort of immunity, 50-something percent through direct vaccination, and 40-something percent through persons being exposed to the virus one way or the other and developing their own quote-unquote immunity. People have been asking, though, if I was vaccinated 2 years ago or whenever early in the vaccination process, what do I do at this point in time? Am I still protected? Do I need to get a booster? If I've had my booster, do I need to do anything else? Is there anything else I can do? Or is there nothing else that I can do other than take the recommendations for precautions like wash my hand and sanitize?
Yes, yes. That is an excellent question, because these vaccines, which were available at the start of 2021, those vaccines were made for the different strains of the virus. And the heavily mutated forms of these virus, or this virus, implies that the level of immunity afforded by the vaccines will be reduced. And so the chance for having what is called a breakthrough infection is increased. Now, your immune system has a memory. So the reason that you take a vaccine is that you're going to stimulate the defenders or soldiers, the antibodies that will be present within the bloodstream. So should you get exposed, you will be protected. Now, that level has fallen at this time. And the so-called bivalent boosters from Pfizer, which are available in places like the U.S., have been not found to be as effective against these highly transmissible variants like the XBB.1.5 that you've been reading about. So even persons who may have had a previous infection, you would have some natural immunity. You would have had antibodies from that infection. But there is a chance of you getting reinfected. Now, the chance for severe infection, hospitalization, and death is reduced in persons who may have been vaccinated before. But it does not mean that you cannot get the fever, cough, and some of the other symptoms associated with the COVID-19. So it does not mean that you may not get a mild illness, but it's still going to reduce the chance for infection. Whether or not you should boost young, healthy people is a matter of opinion. And I think many of the researchers abroad are still unclear. So there's still a cloud of uncertainty whether or not boosters will definitely be effective because of the changing form of the virus. Now, this is nothing new. This is what viruses do. They mutate all the time. They evolve into stronger forms that enhance survival. They may not necessarily cause more illness, but it is to ensure survival of the species. A classic example might be HIV, that it's been 40-plus years that we've been trying to get a vaccine for HIV. The influenza virus requires an annual vaccine, and it is because of the evolution and the mutant forms of the virus that evade past protection. So it does not mean that your vaccines were useless in the past. They will reduce the chance for severe infection, hospitalization, and death. Whether or not boosting will definitely be useful is unclear, even with bivalent boosters, which are available in other parts of the world. What I would say, that is why I want to reiterate that approach, that protection that you're trying to ensure that you have for your family and the rest of the population, there is some level of responsibility, and that protection is multi-layered. Ventilation, filtration, N95 mask indoors, making sure that you manage chronic medical problems so that if you are admitted to hospital, these are not woefully out of control and it will increase the chance of death, mm-hmm. and just being safe. So if I can say at this point that we heard so much about social distancing, staying 6 feet apart, you heard about washing your hands, and that may be relevant for certain infections. But as we've learned more about SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that will cause the COVID-19 infection, as we've learned more about it, we realize that it's an airborne virus. Washing your hands is not going to reduce transmission, and it lingers in the air and can travel so much more than 6 feet.
No, it seems very much as though the information remains the same. Not many variations to what we've been told during the height of the pandemic and what we're being told now. One of the things that we were told back then as well is that if you are healthy, your chances of beating the virus, if you do get infected, are much greater. And I'm assuming that kind of advice would be very pertinent at this point in time, because you really can't do anything else when it comes to vaccination or boosters or all of those other things from any of those official approaches So good health, is that going to be a key determination factor for persons riding out this latest wave, seeing that you don't have a new vaccination round or a new variant of the vaccine or whatever else? Speak to us about good health and the role that can play this time around.
That is a very insightful statement, Sat. And in fact, I think that is one of the key aspects of fighting any sort of infection and boosting your level of protection as well as immunity at a personal level. A healthy diet, one rich in fruits, vegetables, nuts, peas and beans, low fat, low salt, reducing your sugar intake, increasing exercise. And that's why during the lockdowns, I was one of the proponents of the great outdoors, whether you're running, walking, jogging, biking, 30 to 60 minutes for most days in the week. You're not only going to control your blood sugar or blood pressure and help your heart or bones and reduce your chance for cancer. It's a natural way to boost immunity, reducing stress. So if you find out how you can reduce stress, let me know. But a healthy diet as well as exercise, stress reduction, it might include things like exercise, yoga, prayer, meditation, reaching out to friends or family via the phone, weight loss, stopping smoking, limiting alcohol. These are resolutions for 2023. Trying to look after yourself so that we won't have to. And that healthy lifestyle can be extended to things like ensuring that you go for regular visits. One of the problems with lockdowns would have been many patients missed visits. And we know that virtual encounters with doctors were imperfect substitutes for the regular sort of consultations. They missed blood investigations. Many of these individuals, unfortunately, are crash landing into hospital with severe complications. So ensuring that you're adherent to healthy living, medications if needed, and regular visits with your doctor or healthcare providers.
I know that as a nation, we are traumatized. There are many of us who lost loved ones. There are many of us who had to go through the trauma of having to battle with COVID-19 and deal with all those things, medical, and then after. And I know that there are some of us as well who we didn't necessarily get a brush with COVID, but the COVID pandemic dealt us a serious blow to our finances and our ability to earn and all of these things. These fears, these experiences are very fresh in the minds of citizens. And when we have these developments, these statistics being brought forward, there are some people who openly dismiss them and say, you see me and that, I ain't time with that again, you know. And then there are others who are fearful that we go back to where we were. Is there any reason, and I'm using the word panic deliberately, because I want us to address some of these issues so that we can rationalize the discussion for people so that they can know exactly where they stand. Is there any need for us to panic at this point in time?
Yes. It is a good point that you've mentioned that we have had perhaps a separate global epidemic of anxiety and post-traumatic stress following the advent of the COVID-19 global epidemic in 2020. So, and it's understandable. Healthcare workers are burnt out. Persons lost jobs. There were those who are still grieving, and they were not able to grieve properly following the loss of loved ones. And they are not sleeping. There are persons who are grappling long infections. So they have problems with eating. Their memories are down. They're unable to concentrate. They cry all the time. They require even treatment for this. And that is a creeping or silent pandemic too. That is expected, and we will have to deal with this as a nation. We must remain resolute and united. I don't think that there is a need for panic. So, and perhaps one of the quotes I like from a renowned scientist, Curie, is that nothing in life is to be feared. It is only to be understood. And now is the time to understand more, so we will fare less. So it's all about enhancing the level of education, And that's why, well, I know that on this station, you and your viewers are well informed and educated, but the messages must continue to increase. Public health needs to rebuild trust. So I think one of the problems during the pandemic has been the public became not just wary, but became distrustful. There was a plethora of mixed messages. There was blaming, scolding, fear, and this was engendered within the public. And that was never one of the basic aspects of public health. Public health's role is the art and science of health protection, preservation, and prevention. It is to protect its members. It is to protect the members of the public. And I think that going towards these basic aspects of care, avoiding high-risk environments, rather than just waving a big stick and being afraid, increasing understanding, working with the public towards dealing with mitigating this novel pandemic.
Yeah, it is. It is, I believe, something that all the discussions that we've had with you, Doctor, and the other experts, they've spoken about learning to deal with and cope with COVID-19. From what the comparison you made between COVID-19 and HIV and the decades that we've been trying to grapple with HIV, the advancements in treatment have been, it's amazing when it comes to the advancements in treating HIV and AIDS. It's no longer a death sentence.
Yes.
You spoke about decades, four decades of HIV. Is COVID-19 going to be with us for a long period of time?
Certainly. I think that it's the nature of the virus, once more. And the fact that these wily variants have been escaping or breaking that barrier of immunity, that to get to zero COVID seems impossible at this point. So, and neither is it, if I can say it, it's a false narrative that the COVID now is endemic. If you hear that. So, of course, you don't have raging infections, hospitalizations and deaths and say that a virus is endemic. We haven't gotten to that point yet. There are terms which are often used in medicine that I think a lot of people are unclear about. But when we see surges and rises like this and explosions all around the world, like China and the rest of the world, it is still very much in the pandemic phase that we still have a large number of cases, hospitalizations and deaths. Mm-hmm. When an infection becomes endemic, perhaps like the flu virus, there be little surges at times, perhaps when there is winter in North America and Europe, that we may see spikes in cases, or dengue fever. It's always at a certain level. So I think eventually we will get to that point with respect to COVID-19. However, it is still very much a problem in the world, and I understand and share the fears, the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is all about increasing our level of awareness, continuing vigilance, and ensuring that we protect not just ourselves, but the rest of the country.
And Dr. Joel Tilux, and I think this is where we're going to have to drop the curtains on our interview, but I am positive that we will continue to call upon your expertise, your guidance and advice as we move on, because in a couple of weeks' time, I'm sure that these discussions are going to become more pronounced for the obvious reason. We may be seeing, as was suggested, increases in the numbers. And when you start to see the numbers go up, then people start to jump all over the place and be looking for all kind of information. So we'll call on you again for this reasoned approach, this very, very insightful approach to COVID-19, which, as you said, is going to be with us for a long period of time. Thank you for being with us again this morning.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure. Blessings to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Joel Tilux Singh, consultant, physician, endocrinology and diabetes, speaking to us about COVID-19.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.